listening to the English language news of Khan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Wednesday, April the 10th, 2024, in the headlines. Three sons of Hamas political leader Hania are killed in a strike in central Gaza. An Israeli source confirms Israel carried out the assassination. The Hamas leader says from Qatar that this will not change the group's ceasefire demands. Amid Iran threats, Defense Minister Gallant warns that Israel knows how to mount a powerful response on the territory of any enemy who attacks it. Yemen's Houthis claim to have targeted four vessels in the Gulf of Aden, including two Israeli-linked ships. A Lebanese man accused of funneling funds from Iran to Hamas is found dead in a town outside of Beirut. And the weather outlook, slightly warmer tomorrow, still cool for the time of year. Chance of light local rain in the morning in the north and center. Good evening. This is Nomi Segal with the news. We open with the reports from the Gaza Strip. Three sons of Hamas political leader Ismail Haniya were killed in what Al Jazeera reported was an Israeli bombing in the Ashati refugee camp in Gaza. Hamas confirmed the deaths and said the three sons, Hazem, Amir, and Mohammed, were killed when the car they were driving in was bombed. According to reports, two of Haniya's grandchildren were also killed in the attack, and a third was wounded. Al Jazeera reported that the three men were struck by a drone-launched missile as they were traveling in a car on their way to celebrate on the occasion of the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr, which begins today. An Israeli security source confirmed that the three sons of the Hamas leader were the target of a strike. The source said they were involved in terror activity for the Hamas military wing. Responding to the reports, Haniya said from Qatar that he thanks God for bestowing upon us the honor of their martyrdom. In remarks to Al Jazeera, he said, "Their blood is for the liberation of Jerusalem and Al-Aqsa, and we will continue to march on our road." Haniya said that the deaths would not affect Hamas's ceasefire demands. "Our demands are clear and specific, and we will not make concessions on them. The enemy will be delusional if it thinks that targeting my sons at the climax of the negotiations and before the movement sends its response will push Hamas to change its position," he said. Meanwhile, the pro-Saudi Al Arabiya station reported today that a Lebanese citizen accused by the United States of transferring funds from Iran to Hamas was found dead in a town east of Beirut. According to reports, his body was discovered with gunshot wounds. Sources told the network that Mohammed Sarur had been on the wanted list of Israel's Mossad since 2018 and worked in a Hezbollah-affiliated loan institution. Turning to the escalating Israel-Iran rhetoric, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant responded today to Iran's threats to retaliate for the killing of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard officers in a strike in Damascus earlier that Tehran blames on Israel. Speaking during a visit to an Iron Dome battery in the north, Gallant said that Israel would not only defend itself against any attack, but would respond. "In this war, we are being attacked from more than one front, from different directions," Gallant said. "But we will know how to react very quickly with a decisive offensive action against the territory of whoever attacks our territory, no matter where it is in the entire Middle East." He said, "We have this ability. One of the things we have excelled at over the years is that the enemy never knows what surprises we are preparing for it." The defense minister's warning came after Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said that Israel must be punished, and it shall be, for allegedly attacking an Iranian consular building in Syria's capital, Damascus, killing two generals among several Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps officers. Khamenei said that in targeting a consular site, Israel attacked our territory. Foreign Minister Yisrael Katz posted in Hebrew to his official account on social media platform X that if Iran attacks from its territory, Israel will react and attack in Iran. He then repeated the same warning in a Persian language post and tagged Khamenei's official X account. Meanwhile, in other regional tensions, Yemen's Houthis claim to have targeted four vessels in the Gulf of Aden, including two Israeli-linked ships. The spokesman for the Iran-backed group said that two American vessels, one commercial and the other a warship, were also targeted using land-to-sea missiles and drones. Contacts on a hostage release deal as Jerusalem awaits Hamas's response to an American proposal put forward in the negotiations. The Wall Street Journal reported that the terror group has largely rejected the U.S. plan for a temporary ceasefire and intends to present its own proposal. A Khan reporter says that sources in Jerusalem also expect Hamas to present adjustments to the American proposal. The group's response is expected to be submitted in coming days. The return of Palestinians to the northern Gaza Strip has been a main sticking point in the negotiations. Two officials with knowledge of the talks told Reuters that under the U.S. proposal for a truce, Israel would agree to let 150,000 Palestinians return to the northern Gaza Strip without undergoing security checks. In exchange, Hamas would be required to provide a list of women, elderly, and sick hostages it holds who are still alive. 133 hostages are being held in Gaza, now 187 days. According to reports, the U.S. plan presented by the Central Intelligence Agency Director William Burns to officials from Israel, Hamas members, Qatar, and Egypt in Cairo during the discussions calls for a six-week ceasefire in Gaza. During that pause, Hamas would release 40 of the hostages the group is holding in the enclave in exchange for several hundred Palestinian prisoners from Israel's jails, including 100 serving long sentences on terrorism-related charges. Khan reported earlier that Hamas has claimed it does not have 40 hostages who meet the criteria for release, a claim that Israel rejected as false. Two Israeli officials told Reuters that Israel's assessment is that Hamas does not want to strike a deal yet. A senior Hamas official abroad, Osama Hamdan, said earlier that the organization is preparing a clear answer to the proposal presented by mediators on a hostage release deal and will submit it in the not-too-distant future. In an interview with the Al Arabi Network, Hamdan claimed that Israel's position on the truce is evasive and intended to gain time for continued IDF operations. It does not answer any of the Palestinian people's demands, he said, asserting that Israel seeks the opposite, to perpetuate an occupation similar to what is in the West Bank. Family members of hostages with Israeli who hold Israeli-American citizenship met yesterday in Washington with the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and thanked the American administration for its efforts to return their loved ones. Jonathan Dekelchen, whose 35-year-old son Sagi is held captive in Gaza, said that there is a deal on the table right now, and the families and the world wait for Hamas to get to yes. Speaking to reporters after the meeting with the U.S. vice president, Dekelchen noted that his son's third child was born while Sagi has been in captivity.
My name is Jonathan Dekelchen. I'm the father of Sagi, a 35-year-old, now father of three. His third daughter was born in mid-December. Sagi is from kibbutz near Oz, which is my home as well, which was completely destroyed on October 7th. Sagi does not know, as the rest of the hostages do not know, what became of their families or what is happening around them. We all are here, for not the first time, to work together with the Biden administration to do everything that we can and encourage all parties to reach a deal that will result in our loved ones coming home. Not only that, by doing so, the horror that the civilians of Gaza have been experiencing for the last 6 months can come to an end. There is hope for people on both sides of the border only after the hostages come home. In the meetings that we've had here for the last couple of days, both in the White House and elsewhere with administration officials, what we have heard is that there is a deal on the table right now that all of the parties agree to and are willing to work with. We are waiting now, and the world waits for Hamas to get to yes. It is in their court. There is no reason not to move forward on this deal. All of the intermediaries are in favor, and we, all of us, will see shortly if Hamas cares enough about its own people, to say nothing of our loved ones, to move towards de-escalation, to returning life to everyone in and around Gaza. It's clear to us that the Biden administration and wall-to-wall in Congress, there is absolute, absolute support for getting all of the hostages home. Those who are alive and those who've been murdered, those on October 7th and those who subsequently died in Hamas custody. That is absolutely clear. We are completely appreciative. We know the privilege that we have as U.S. citizens. And we also know, we've been told and we see, that the administration will continue to work as hard as it can until all of the hostages are home.
Jonathan Dekelchen, father of Sagi, who is captive in Gaza. In remarks earlier today, Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz, a member of the War Cabinet, said that the Israeli negotiating team to the talks is making vast efforts to achieve the goal of returning the hostages. Alongside military pressure, there is supreme importance to diplomatic pressure, the National Unity Party leader said in a statement to the media. I have spoken about this with senior officials in the United States and in the region. This is the time to use all leverage on Hamas. The Hamas leaders need to know that alongside the military price, the world and the countries of the region will exact a heavy price if Hamas sabotages the framework on the table. Regarding the fighting in the Gaza Strip, Gantz said that victory will come one step after another. We are on the path to it and will not stop. We will enter Rafah. We will return to Khan Yunis. We will act wherever there are terror objectives. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant has told his American counterpart Lloyd Austin that no date has been set for an Israeli military operation in Rafah. His comments came against the backdrop of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's public declaration earlier in the week of the opposite, that a date has been set, though Netanyahu did not disclose it. The U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that if there is a date for an IDF operation in Rafah, Washington is not aware of it. CNN reported that senior officials in Washington believe Netanyahu's comments on the matter were empty statements stemming primarily from weak political standing. This, among other factors, in the face of strong pushback from elements in his coalition, Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, calling for Israel to move forward with an operation. A Khan reporter says that an IDF representative told the members of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee today that the IDF received a target date to be prepared for an entry into Rafah. And on day 187 of the war, IDF forces from the Nahal Brigade continued to operate in the central part of the enclave. An IDF statement said that in the past day they killed several terrorists. Israeli fighter jets and other aircraft struck dozens of targets in the Strip. U.S. President Joe Biden upped his criticism of Prime Minister Netanyahu's role in the Israel-Hamas war, but did not indicate any significant changes in U.S. policy toward its Middle East ally. In an interview with Univision that was taped last week before Biden's conversation with Netanyahu and which aired last night, the U.S. president said he thinks what Netanyahu is doing is a mistake, particularly regarding strikes on vehicles and aid personnel in Gaza.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera. So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire. Allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country. I've spoken with everyone from the Saudis to the Jordanians to the Egyptians. They're prepared to move in. They're prepared to move this food in. And I think there's no excuse to not provide for the medical and the food needs of those people. They should be done now.
U.S. President Joe Biden. Meanwhile, pressure from Democratic members of Congress. Dozens have signed an open letter to President Joe Biden calling on him to halt arms transfers to Israel until the conclusion of an inquiry into that erroneous IDF strike in Gaza that killed seven staffers of the World Central Kitchen Relief Group, including a dual U.S. citizen. Most of the signatories to the letter are from the party's left flank, noting that Israel has said it did not intentionally target the aid workers. The Congress members said that if this is true, it is a shockingly unacceptable mistake. Backing of the letter from former U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a staunch supporter of Israel, has been seen as an indication that support for suspending weapons deliveries to Israel is becoming mainstream in the party. And a senior U.S. Democratic lawmaker said he wants to receive assurances from the Biden administration that U.S. weapons won't be used for further indiscriminate bombing, in his words, by Israel, before signing off on an anticipated sale of F-15 fighter jets to Jerusalem. Representative Gregory Meeks, a ranking Democratic member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said he is waiting for assurances to make sure he knows the types of weapons and what the weapons will be utilized for. We asked Dr. Yonatan Freeman, an international relations expert from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, if there are any indications of a shift in Washington's stance toward Israel.
Well, I think that we have to understand that when it comes to friends, there can be disagreements, just like there were disagreements when it came to the Iran nuclear deal, just when it came to disagreements when it comes to U.S.-Russian relations and Israeli-Russian relations vis-a-vis what's going on in the Ukraine. We've also had disagreements about Israeli-Chinese relations. So I think disagreements can always happen between friends. And I think if you look at this current war in Gaza, I think that we have not seen such a pro-Israel approach in terms of a current war that Israel has been fighting in modern times. I mean, even though we've been hearing some criticism, just like there could be any kind of criticism between the two sides, we're also hearing words by the U.S. administration that they want Hamas defeated. They want Israel to win. Above all, these criticisms aren't really leading to any sort of big policy changes. And I think that's the bottom line. What all push comes to shove when it comes to classifying what's going on between Washington and Jerusalem, what matters is not the statements, but the actual policies.
Right now, there are growing calls within Biden's own Democratic Party. Perhaps they started in the left flank, but now the former House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, a staunch supporter of Israel, has added her voice of support to calls saying halt weapons supplies to Israel in the wake of these latest developments in the Gaza war.
Well, I think that when you look at these calls, we have to take into account that there's currently a very big election year going on in the United States. We know that there have been some protests in various cities in the United States. We know that some of these members of Congress represent audiences that from different towns and cities that there might be some of these protests going on. But I think if you look at the overall support, it's still pretty strong. There are even voices in the Democratic Party who have been criticizing the criticism that some members of the U.S. administration have been raising. So I think looking at the big picture, it seems that there's still a very much a big support across the board when it comes to the Congress, when it comes to the leading members of the government in Washington. And any kind of calls about sanctions or stopping weapons from coming in, I think these are more of political spins. I don't see any sort of actual ability for these sort of calls to really lead into actual action. And just to give one example, with all the calls that have been made by these members, as you state, I have not heard of one call or a significant call by anyone in the United States were saying we should also stop buying weapons from Israel. We should stop getting aid from Israel when it comes to different weapon systems and other things which the U.S. in the last few years has also been receiving from Israel as well.
So what kinds of conversations do you think are taking place behind those closed doors between the U.S. and Israel regarding the policy going forward?
Well, I think it's not a question of whether or not Israel should continue with the war as it sees fit, but I think it's more of discussions behind closed doors as to how it should continue. And we know that one of the issues has been humanitarian aid coming into Gaza. We know that, you know, as some people were reporting, that America is against an operation in Rafah. But now we're hearing that it's not about an operation in Rafah, it's about how the operation will take place in Rafah. So I think the issue of humanitarian aid, I think it's also, in terms of discussions between the two countries, it could also be what will happen in Gaza the day after. And I think another discussion is really to make sure that this war doesn't expand into other areas, especially what's going on right now with Lebanon and Hezbollah, and the fear that America might have that a further process in this war might lead to further kind of militant activity by Hezbollah, which will need a bigger Israeli response. And a war in Lebanon would obviously mean greater ramifications for American interests in the region.
So given all of this, would you say then that despite perhaps increasing voices that are being heard regarding some kind of change in the U.S. policy towards Israel, it's not at any kind of tipping point?
Yeah, I think it's not at a tipping point. I think that in the end, Israel has a lot of leeway. I think that Israel of today and the war in Gaza, compared to previous operations, I think that Israel is at a higher standing in terms of its ability to decide when it wants to fight and when it wants to end the fight. And I think that obviously when it comes to American pressure or American requests, I think that that could play a role in trying to maybe explain to the public later on why the war had to stop or why we couldn't do this or we couldn't do that, because, you know, there's other ramifications and different things that we have to take into account internationally. But I think in the end, America understands, especially because of the results on the 7th of October, that no country would be able to stop itself from responding in a way that Israel has. I think that America understands that. And I think America knows that it can maybe advise Israel on how it should fight, can advise Israel on why it should fight.
Dr. Yonatan Freeman of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. One of the main points of criticism of Israel in the Gaza war has circled the issue of humanitarian assistance flow into the Gaza Strip. The coordinator for government activities in the territory said today that Israel is surging aid into Gaza, with over 1,200 trucks entering in 3 days, averaging about 400 a day. In a statement, the authority said that there are 500 trucks currently waiting at the Gaza side of Kerem Shalom for pickup by UN agencies. Koget said, UN, do your job, focus on distribution, and stop blaming Israel for your colossal failures. In an online briefing today, government spokesperson Ilana Stein dispelled UN agency claims of discrepancies regarding the volume of aid getting into the Gaza Strip, and she recapped the latest information from Koget.
The facts don't lie. Israel is surging aid into Gaza, with over 1,200 trucks entering in 3 days, an average of 400 trucks a day. Right now, 500 trucks worth of aid is just waiting to be picked up by UN agency on the Gaza side of Kerem Shalom. 500 trucks just waiting there. It's time for the UN to focus its energy on feeding Gazans rather than maligning Israel. Do your job. Focus on distribution and stop blaming Israel for your failures. Just yesterday, 468 trucks were inspected and went in, the highest number of aid trucks that entered Gaza in one day since the start of the war. 303 packages carrying hundreds and thousands of meals were airdropped. 47 food trucks were coordinated to northern Gaza overnight. With our Jordanian partners since December, 700 aid trucks have been delivered via the Allenby Bridge to Kerem Shalom. The full capacity of this route isn't being utilized. We will continue expanding our efforts to facilitate humanitarian aid to Gaza. As usual, the daily humanitarian operational pause between 10 and 2 p.m. continues in the Al-Salam neighborhood in Rafah to enable movement of humanitarian aid.
UN humanitarian agency OCHA and UNRWA claim that there's no actual increase in aid entering Gaza as the trucks delivered to the UN are only half full due to the COGAT screening process, inflating, therefore, the number count of trucks getting in. This statistical misrepresentation would, according to UN agencies, serve Israel to portray itself as competent and efficient, while the UN would be the opposite. Why does the UN need to repack the trucks to be full? Do they lack personnel? How much of a difference would this actually make?
What I can tell you is that UNRWA is an organization that we still haven't heard from them, that they make sure that they are terror clean. They still have terrorists among the people who work for them. So we always say that there's the messenger carrying the message, and it's not, and it's important as well. So in this case, the messenger is not reliable. So anything they say regarding humanitarian aid or anything else, for us, it might be just saying and being the speakers of Hamas terror organization. Unless we know that UNRWA is clean of terrorists, we cannot really take their words for face value.
Ilana Stein, a spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate. Turning to the north, two rockets were fired toward Kiryat Shmona this afternoon. One was intercepted. The other fell in an open area. There were no reports of injuries or damage. An alert of a suspected hostile air infiltration in the same area sounded later in the day was determined to be a false alarm. The IDF confirmed last night that it had struck Syrian military infrastructure that precise intelligence showed was used by Hezbollah. The IDF said it holds the Syrian regime accountable for all activities that take place within its territory and will not allow for any attempted actions which could lead to the entrenchment of Hezbollah on the Syrian front. The IDF statement said that a number of Hezbollah observation posts and infrastructure in South Lebanon were also hit. Against the backdrop of concerns of an escalation in the conflict, a Khan reporter says a growing number of schools are preparing for remote learning. A Khan reporter says that they are asking students to take their books back with them amid the possibility that in-school learning will not resume after the Passover school break. The Education Ministry said there's no concrete information and it is a local independent initiative. Meanwhile, the commander of UNIFIL forces, Aroldo Lazaro, warned there is a real danger for an escalation on the Israel-Lebanon border. He said in a statement that UNIFIL forces are calling for an end to the hostilities and work toward a permanent ceasefire and long-term solution to the conflict. 6 months into the war, the Alma Research and Education Center has produced a report on the hostilities in the north. In this excerpt from a briefing earlier this week, Alma president and founder, Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Sarid Zahavi, gave her assessment on where the conflict in the northern arena could be heading.
Look, what Hezbollah wants, it's really difficult to say at this point. But at least we can all agree that Hezbollah wants to preserve the situation as it is and maybe even wants to escalate, but not by its own initiative. Meaning that it gained an achievement. 60,000 Israelis are evacuated. I talked about the difficulties to bring them back as long as possible. What's the operational achievement of the IDF? As I've said, 4,000 targets that were bombed is a very impressive number. This means that the area of defense, I'll put it this way, the area of defense, maybe there is less presence of Hezbollah there, but eventually the villages are very, very, the Lebanese villages and the Israelis, by the way, are very, very close to the fence. And we do see launchings from these villages, from these homes inside these villages and even mosques inside these villages. And this is continued to happen all the time. And IDF continues to fight that. So even though IDF attacked 4,000 targets in Lebanon, maybe more, Hezbollah continues to preserve capability in its fire arrays, whether it's rockets, UAVs and anti-tanks. Even though, as I've said, there is probably kind of a damage, this damaging is not enough to stop the fire. So I can't, you know, I can't have a briefing about the past 6 months without saying a few words about the past week, which was really interesting and didn't end yet, meaning we don't know exactly how everything is going to play out by the end of this specific week. Last week, there was a targeted killing against the most senior Iranian officer, Hassan Madawi or Zaidi, he has different names. He was the commander of the Northern Front against Israel in this campaign. And the target killing took place in a very symbolic place right next to the Iranian embassy in Damascus. And we have an Iranian promise to retaliate. American intelligence published that their assessment or information, I don't know, that Iran will retaliate with missiles and UAVs against Israel. We don't know from where. From Iran, from Iraq, from Lebanon, from Syria, there are, you know, that many options. And of course, the question from where also indicates on the question of how Israel will defend itself with regard to from where it is going to be launched. It's a different way of prevention if it's from Iran or from Lebanon. In any case, we've seen IDF raising the alert, drafting reservists in specific arrays like intelligence, aerial defense systems, and home front. And yet, again, as a resident of the North, I can say that the instructions to the home front remained the same. And truly, the feeling of uncertainty is huge because maybe the Iranians will keep their promise and retaliate. Maybe Israel will succeed in prevention of this retaliation. And maybe the Iranians will decide to postpone the retaliation because of the fact that we are that prepared. So if I'm putting aside for a moment the question of the specific week with specific retaliation of Iran, I want to end the briefing with the question of what's the solution, which I'm being asked all the time by the people that I meet. And during this war, you know, we heard in the media mainly two options. One option is a preemptive attack, which I think this term is a little bit misleading because we are already in war. Preemptive attack will put Israel as the completely aggressor, and we are not the aggressor here. We were attacked in October 8th. Preemptive attack would mean that Israel will diminish, I don't know, strategic capabilities of Hezbollah. I am not saying 100%, but probably will have some kind of achievement around that. But it also means a lot of damages to both sides, and we know that. It will mean an all-out war. It would mean thousands of rockets that will be launched to Israel. On the other side, there are those who said, well, let's have a diplomatic arrangement. I'm not saying agreement because you cannot expect an agreement with a terrorist organization, but arrangement. Arrangement meaning that there will be some kind of arrangement with the mediation of France, United States, with the Lebanese government, that it is clear to everybody that behind it stands Hezbollah. Except Hezbollah refused to discuss. And Hezbollah said very clearly, as I've said, that as long as there is no ceasefire in Gaza, there is no ceasefire in Lebanon. So all we heard until now in the past 6 months is different ideas around this diplomatic arrangement. And if I'm trying to summarize all the different ideas, what I see is that the framing is a withdrawal or pushback of Hezbollah 8 to 10 kilometers from the border instead of disarming of Hezbollah 25 kilometers from the border, which is a reflection of the resolution that ended the previous war, 1701, United Nations Security Council resolution. The idea of these 8 to 10 kilometers is to push away the anti-tank threat, but nobody's talking about a deadline. Nobody's talking about how do you monitor that. Most of the suggestion talked about relying on the current mechanism, which is the Lebanese army and UNIFIL, which were ineffective in the past 17 years. So I don't see how this is going to change. I think that every solution needs to include disarm, deadline enforcement with an effective force that will be willing to clash with Hezbollah, since Hezbollah is not going to disarm in South Lebanon just because it signed an agreement. So what do I offer? I think the IDF is trying to go on a third path, except I'm not sure it is doing so enough. Okay. I think that IDF, when you look at the amount of targets that were bombed in Lebanon, is trying to create a military achievement without getting to a full-scale war. But in order to get a military achievement, you need a little bit more than what is being done now. And I think that once there is a ceasefire, then doesn't matter what it is, IDF will have to establish a solid defensive plan for the communities to present it to the residents in order to give them the feeling that they can go back home and to draw very specific red lines of Israel that if things will not change in South Lebanon, Israel will operate even in the price of renewing the conflict or renewing the campaign. And of course, all of that must be done with the building of, I wouldn't say a coalition, but maybe international legitimacy to this full package of how we are going to make sure that we are not going to be massacred again, but this time from the north.
Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Sarit Zahavi, president and founder of the Alma Center. More news coming up, including a new initiative to memorialize those murdered at the Nova Festival. But first, Dudu Tasa is a yom. What a day.
וכבר הייתי עצוב, כבר הייתי שמח ועוד פעם עצוב. עכשיו נכנס אורח, על מה נדבר? אין פתרון כאן. וכבר הייתי גיבור, עפתי בשמיים, ועכשיו ביום אפור אני עוקב שלולית של מים, אסור לאחר. אין פתרון קל. איזה יום עבר עליי, זה קצת יותר מדי. פתחי לי את הדלת. כבר הייתי שיקור, עכשיו אני פיקח, ושוב כמו אידיוט אני נוטה להתווכח, על מה נדבר? אין זיכרון קל. בועט ומתחבט כל כך קרוב, אני לא נוקע, אני ליצן, אני נסיך, עד היום אני לא יודע, תלוי מי שואל. אין פתרון קל, לא לי. יותר מדי פתחי לי את הדלת. איזה יום עבר עליי, זה קצת יותר מדי פתחי לי את הדלת. כבר הייתי שמח ועוד פעם עצוב.
Taking a midway look at the headlines this evening, the IDF confirms that three of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh's sons were killed in an airstrike in the Gaza Strip. A statement from the IDF said that the three were Hamas operatives en route to carry out terror activity. Khan reported earlier this evening that the prime minister and the war cabinet weren't informed ahead of time of the strike. According to security sources, the decision was made based on an operational opportunity. The Hamas leader Haniyeh said from Qatar that the killing of his three sons will not change the group's ceasefire demands. Amid Iran threats, Defense Minister Gallant warns that Israel knows how to mount a powerful response on the territory of any enemy who attacks it. Iran-backed Houthis in Yemen claim to have targeted four vessels in the Gulf of Aden, including two Israeli ships and a U.S. warship. A Lebanese man accused of funneling funds from Iran to Hamas is found dead in a town outside of Beirut. The weather outlook slightly warmer tomorrow, still cool for the time of year. Chance of light local rain in the morning in the north and center. Education Minister Yoav Kish announced today that an Israel Prize for Lifetime Achievement will be bestowed this year to Edna Solodar, who fought in Israel's independence war, served in the Knesset, and was a leader in the United Kibbutz movement. Solodar died yesterday at the age of 94. News of the award was conveyed to her sister. An Israel Prize for Lifetime Achievement is also being awarded to Israeli filmmaker Moshe Adari for his seminal role in Israeli and world cinema. The Supreme Court has announced that it will hold a hearing on the yeshiva draft law in 2 months' time on June 2nd. An expanded panel of nine justices will preside over the deliberations. Earlier this week, the government asked for permission to obtain independent legal representation for the upcoming hearing, rather than be represented by Attorney General Gali Baharav Miara, who many in the government have had strong disagreements with on the matter. A temporary cabinet measure that gave a blanket exemption to ultra-Orthodox yeshiva students expired on April 1st after the government failed to find a way to comply with a court ruling from 2017, which determined blanket military service exemptions for Haredi yeshiva students to be discriminatory and illegal. By March 31st, Baharav Miara told the Defense Ministry and Education Ministry that it must begin the process of drafting members of the ultra-Orthodox community. She also warned against any attempts to continue funding yeshivas that harbor students who dodge their army service. Protests were held this evening by some Haredi Orthodox against the yeshiva draft. Against the backdrop of the pending appointment of a new police commissioner, the Attorney General has called on the government to urgently act to appoint a chair to the Committee on Senior Appointments. She wrote that the failure of the advisory committee from convening is impeding proper governance and public interest. An activist in the Brothers in Arms movement, who is suspected of throwing a torch at a police officer during a demonstration last week by the Prime Minister's residence in Jerusalem, was slated to be released to house arrest this evening. He was originally remanded in detention for 4 days, but the court ordered his release to house arrest. Violent clashes between Israeli settlers and Palestinians erupted in the area between the outpost Oz Zion and the village of Borka in the Binyamin region today. Security sources said the confrontations involved shoving and rock throwing. An IDF force summoned to the scene fired at two Palestinians throwing rocks. Three other Palestinians were reported injured, though how they were hurt was not clear. Israelis set fire to several cars in a junkyard. The incident is under investigation. And Israeli security forces operating in Judea and Samaria overnight arrested nine wanted Palestinians. The security forces also seized arms. France's foreign minister says there is no immediate plan to impose sanctions on Israel to force it to allow more humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza, toning down his stance after tougher remarks made earlier this week. Addressing lawmakers in the National Assembly, Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné said there is no plan at this stage for general sanctions against Israel. France recently imposed sanctions against some individuals it says are linked to excessive violence by settlers against Palestinians, and the minister said that it will continue to do so. Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong says that Canberra would consider recognition of a Palestinian state, a shift in policy as the international community looks for a two-state solution to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In a speech at the Australian National University, Wong backed comments by Britain's Foreign Minister David Cameron, who has said that recognizing a Palestinian state, including at the United Nations, would make a two-state solution irreversible. Wong said Israel's own security depends on a two-state solution.
We are now 30 years on from the Oslo Accords. 30 years on from the Accords that put Palestinian statehood at the end of a process. And the failure of this approach by all parties over decades, as well as the Netanyahu government's refusal to even engage on the question of a Palestinian state, have caused widespread frustration. So the international community is now considering the question of Palestinian statehood as a way of building momentum towards a two-state solution. Recognising a Palestinian state, that one that can only exist side by side with a secure Israel, doesn't just offer the Palestinian people an opportunity to realise their aspirations, it also strengthens the forces for peace and it undermines extremism. It undermines Hamas, Iran, and Iran's other destructive proxies in the region. So I say to you, a two-state solution is the only hope of breaking the endless cycle of violence. Now, there are those who always claim recognition is rewarding an enemy. This is wrong. First, because Israel's own security depends on a two-state solution. There is no long-term security for Israel unless it is recognised by the countries of its region. But the normalisation agenda that was being pursued before October 7 cannot proceed without progress on Palestinian statehood. Saudi Arabia has made clear there will be no diplomatic relations with Israel unless an independent Palestinian state is recognised. Second, because there is no role for Hamas in a future Palestinian state.
Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong. Violence in Arab society. A 34-year-old resident of Iqsal last night murdered four members of his extended family in Nazareth and seriously wounded his mother and sister before killing himself at the scene. The son-in-law of one of the murder victims said that the violent inclinations of the man were known, and if authorities had dealt with him, the tragedy could have been averted. A Palestinian security prisoner who was receiving treatment at Hadassah Medical Center in Jerusalem's Mount Scopus Hospital at the directive of the health ministry has been moved to a security detention center, this following protests from a bereaved father. Herzl Hajjaj, whose daughter Shir Hajjaj was murdered in a Jerusalem terror attack in 2017 at the age of 22, called on the health ministry to end the practice of treating terrorists in Israeli hospitals. Hajjaj said it is unreasonable for terrorists to be hospitalized in VIP rooms in hospitals, no matter how injured they are. In the immediate aftermath of the October 7th Hamas massacre in southern Israel, then Health Minister Moshe Arbel ordered public hospitals and health services to redirect injured terrorists to IDF or prison service medical facilities. However, by December, reports indicated that the order had been reversed and terror suspects were once again undergoing treatment in Israeli facilities. The Police Internal Investigations Unit has entered into examination of alleged evidence tampering by police in the investigation of the killing of Yuval Castleman in December, who shot terrorists carrying out an attack in Jerusalem, but was himself shot and killed by an off-duty IDF reservist who misidentified him and mistook him for a terrorist. The probe found no suspicion that police officials sought to interfere with the investigation procedures. The probe was opened after an autopsy performed on Castleman's body. After it was exhumed, found an M16 bullet and pieces of shrapnel in his body, contradicting the Israel police's position immediately after the incident that there were no bullets in Castleman's body and an autopsy was unnecessary. The Internal Investigations Unit said the findings of the probe showed that the Israel police's erroneous conclusion was based on the evidence that was placed before it at the time, which led it to believe honestly and in good faith that no bullets were found in the deceased's bodies. The police unit added that the closing of its examination into the affair has no bearing on the military police investigation of Castleman's death. Castleman's family expressed disappointment with the decision. Bezikaron, a startup founded by new immigrants that provides a searchable database for locating grave sites and offers services for tending to them, has launched an initiative for families of those murdered at the Nova Festival on October 7th to create online memorial pages for their loved ones. Artem Manilov, a co-founder and director of Bezikaron, told us the idea for the initiative came after visiting the Nova Festival exhibition when it was showing at the Tel Aviv Expo.
I and my brothers, we created this company 1.5 years ago. We had a business since 2017 in U.S., and it was the system for cemeteries and crematoriums. That do mapping and inventory for cemeteries. And when we moved here to Israel, we decided to try this business to do here in Israel. And we got our first client, it was Ashdod Cemetery, and we did their inventory. And when we did this mapping and inventory, we saw what happens in the cemetery and decided, and the idea came to our minds, to create this application, Bezikaron, to help to people to search their tombstones, headstones, and to create the memorial pages of their beloved ones who gone.
So this is something that people initiate or that the company calls the information and makes it available?
Yeah, of course. Without the permission of the family, we don't post anything. We just post the open data that we have in the cemeteries. You know, just the photo of the tombstone and the names and dates that we have on the tombstone, and that's it.
And in the wake of the Nova Festival tragedy, you've created a special initiative. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we decided it. Like the first project when we decided to unite the several, many memorial pages into one group. And it's like the idea to make their own application and their own website where you can find by using any name of the people who passed in this massacre and just to find the personal information that now what we are doing now, we are gathering this information from the relatives, what they want to post, the text, some information, some history of these people, their photos and videos. And from this page, you can go directly to the point of our system of inventory. And we will put very accurate every GPS point on every cemetery in the entire Israel. And anyone who wants to find the headstone or tombstone of these people, just they can find it using this system and just read the every story of every man who was there.
How did you make the connection with the families from the Nova?
We just got acquainted with the people who just organizers of the Nova Festival. We just, when we were invited to this exhibition in Tel Aviv,
at the Expo.
At the Expo, yes. And we got acquainted with the organizers of this Nova, and we just spoke to them, and they help us as well to find. It's like volunteers' work that we do, and we think that in the future we can. It's our first experience, but we can do the same memorial pages for not for just the massacres and the disasters like this, and as well for universities, for museums who just want. For example, there were professors in university, and they passed away, and we as well can united. In the one group of people and to do this pages, like memorial pages.
Have you had any feedback from families who are interested in doing these pages?
Yeah. We spoke already. Just they want and they pay a lot of attention to select what they want to post there, the information.
And these are private memorial pages or public memorial pages?
It depends. It depends. If the families will give us permission, it will be public. If not, we can change the status and it will be just a link for these families and they can share this link among their family, of course, and friends.
Artem Manilov, co-founder of Bezikaron. Before the weather and return headlines, Moshe Ben Ari, Zikaron Echad Mushlam. One perfect memory.
יש בי חלומות, אני חולם בגוונים אין בכל מיני צבעים. יש בי רצונות, אני רוצה הרבה, וכמה שרוצה יותר לא שבע לעולם. יש בי זיכרונות, אני זוכר הרבה, חלקם טובים ובחלק טעמם. יש בי גם פחדים, אני פוחד לא קצת, והם נוגעים בי, נוגעים בכל דבר. חלום אחד חשוב, חלום שתהיה בו, ורצון אחד רוצה שתהיה בו כל הזמן. פחד אחד קיים בי, שתצאי לי מחיי, וזיכרון אחד מושלם, זה את ואני. זיכרון אחד מושלם, זה את ואני. יש בי הבטחות, פתחתי דרך, חלקן קיימתי וחלקן לקח הזמן. יש לי חברים, אני חבר הרבה, אך כשיחווה האור אולי יעלמו כולם. יש לאן לגדול, אני גדל הרבה, וכמה שיותר גדל הסביב נהיה קטן. יש בי חלונות, דרכם בורח די הרבה, וכמה שרחוק אלך, תמיד אחזור לך.
And the weather outlook, slightly warmer tomorrow, but still cold for the time of year. Chance of light local rain in the morning in the north and center. The temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Jerusalem, 11 to 19. Tel Aviv, 14 to 21. Haifa, 13 to 19. Tzfat, 10 to 16. Tiberias, 15 to 21. Beersheba, 12 to 25. And in Eilat, from 17 degrees tonight, going up to 29 degrees Celsius tomorrow. Taking another look at the news headlines this evening, the IDF confirms that three Hamas terror operatives, whom it identifies as the three sons or three of the sons of Hamas political leader Hania, were killed in a strike in the Gaza Strip. It said that intelligence information indicated they were en route to terror activity in the Strip. Hamas's leader says the killing of his three sons will not change the group's ceasefire demands. Amid Iran threats, Defense Minister Gallant warns that Israel knows how to mount a powerful response on the territory of any enemy who attacks it. Iran-backed Houthi rebels from Yemen claim to have targeted four vessels in the Gulf of Aden, including two Israeli ships and a U.S. warship. A Lebanese man accused of transferring funds from Iran to Hamas is found dead in a town outside of Beirut. The weather outlook slightly warmer tomorrow, still cool for the time of year. Chance of light local rain in the morning in the north and center. That's the news. Join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. news flash on the Kan English Facebook page. Find us on Spotify, X, or write to us at kanenglish@kan.org.il. Together with sound engineer Moshe Moshkovitz, this is Naomi Segal wishing you good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.